Hi, I'm Robert Osborne. I'm back with part two of TCM's Private Screenings Uncut, Betty Hutton. Now, in this second half of my interview with Betty, which was originally aired in July of the year 2000, Betty talks about the many ups and downs in her personal life, which included a string of unsuccessful marriages and very strained relations with her two daughters. But one particularly meaningful relationship came into her life when she met a Catholic priest named Father McGuire. And he helped Betty get her life back on track, even encouraged her and helped her late in her life to get her high school and college diplomas. Betty talks about that very important aspect of her life, as well as her close bond with her mother and her friendships with the likes of Cary Grant and Walter Winchell, also George Raft. She also talks about her work on television and her successful recording career and what Betty believed to be the high points and the low points of her life. Betty also gives her opinion of modern Hollywood and the advice she would give anyone who wants to follow in her footsteps and become a performer. So here is part two of TCM's Private Screenings Uncut, Betty Hutton.
Now, also, all along this, you were also married.
Yep.
You were having several marriages, as a matter of fact.
Four.
You had children. You were running a life, you know, having your own life. Was there any downtime? I mean, was there any time for just Betty to be quietly Betty?
No, I never found me until Father McGuire. I did not know who I was, Bob. I know what the product was. You know, it's like hamburger, hot dogs. I was the product, but I never found me. And I'm just beginning to with Father, because he'd say, Betty, you're just a very hurt child. Let's start from the word go. And that's how I became a Catholic. I don't move anywhere without the rosary, you know, because I know I'm scared inside. I'm always scared, Bob. I'm never secure. And that's the way you have to be, Jolson said. You can't give him your heart if it's not there, Betty. And I never forgot those words.
Do you think it's possible to have a happy married life
and
raise children in Hollywood?
No, I do not. And I can't even think of any. You know, the man, it's okay if the man is married, not a star. You know, the woman can be a star, but if the woman isn't home with the children, Bob, then the children haven't got a prayer. I was never with my kids. That's why I forgive everything that's happened to them. They did not know me, because I didn't know me. And it took me all those years to find Father.
Now, tell me about Father and how you met him and who he was.
Well, I was in Rhode Island, and I was taking pills at the time to sleep, because I can't sleep worth a damn. And
you've always had this incredible energy.
Yes, because I don't sleep. I'm rehearsing all the time. Mm-hmm. And I went to a place to get off of them, and Father McGuire had a cook who was an alcoholic, and he had put her in this home. And he came there to see her, or rather, he brought her there. And she was bombed when he brought her, you know, but these are the people he worked with. And I just watched him. I thought, my God, that's a priest. And that girl is talking to him, you know, like that. And she's tough. And Father never moved a hair. He just said, it's all right, Pearl. You're going to be okay. And he finally left her, and she went bananas. They had to give her a shot to calm her down. And I looked out the window, and I thought, I've got to become something in their church. So I said, Pearl, what do you do? She said, I'm the cook. I said, what if you get drunk and you can't cook? She said, you want to go with me? And that's how it started. And I went to the rectory. I met Father McGuire and Father Hamilton, and my life just turned around. When I became a Catholic, it was so great, because as I walked down the aisle, I know I'm going to receive Christ. I would sob so, because this brought something out of me that I never knew was in there. That's my heart. Christ is my heart. But I didn't know him. I did not know God. I had worked so hard, I didn't have time, you know. Oh, it was so great to be in a Catholic surrounding. You know, I hope that doesn't make anybody out there unhappy with me. But for me, that was the answer, you know. And Father McGuire was so good. I don't care who came to the door, who needed help. It didn't matter what denomination. It didn't matter what you had done. He'd reach in with his heart. And I worked with him. After I got to know him well, I said, Father, you've never been to the movies? He'd never seen a movie. He said, no. I said, you got to let me help you there. So we started working together because I had the heart, Father had the heart to understand me, and he knew all the background of alcohol. Oh, did he know that? So we worked together, and I have a dear friend there, Judy Rector, and they were my closest friends, and I worked 20 years with them to pull them out of a similar situation, and they became so happy and so beloved that they are still my closest friends. Say, Father, 25 years I had him with me. Can you imagine? Then I found me, Bob. I really found me. I belong to God. I no longer have to belong to a studio, to a set of people. Wherever you are, I'll be there.
So you cooked for a while.
Yes,
there.
Yes, with then Pearl. She got bombed one night, and it was my birthday.
Are you a good cook?
Yes, I am.
Are
I
you?
Learned how. Oh, yeah, my mother was a great cook. Pearl was supposed to serve me this wonderful dinner. It was my birthday, and it was Father Hamilton's birthday, and a friend of mine, it was his birthday. And I thought, we sat down, and I thought, gee, it's funny, nothing's coming out of the kitchen. So I went out there, and here are these lids on top, bubbling like this, but no Pearl. I thought, where is she? So I went upstairs, and she is stone gone. You know, I said, Pearl, it's okay, and I went down, and I cooked dinner. There was nothing cooking, you know. But she came out of it finally because Father was, but she left the rectory after. She couldn't quit drinking. See, that is something that you have to want inside. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. My mother never could quit. Mm-hmm. It's a disease, Bob. When my mother was an alcoholic, they just called her a drunk because they didn't know it was a disease. Mm-hmm. And somehow I did. I knew she was sick. She wouldn't deliberately hurt me like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So then in Newport, Rhode Island with Father, I began to work with all troubled people. And that is my niche in life. I love it. If I can take a soul that nobody wants any part of and pull them up by their bootstraps, that is a joy. And I mean a joy, Bob.
It's all that love you have out there that you've always given and wanted to give.
Yeah. And now I know I'm on a personal basis, you know. When I tell my story or whatever, from the stage with all the nuns and all, they said, we never dreamt, Betty, that you could have trouble, because priests and nuns come from troubled families. Mm. They do, Bob. They are not just born perfectly. They have nightmare problems. I said, let's sit down on the floor. And we'd squat down on the floor. Let me tell you how I started. My mother was like that. You know, they couldn't believe that they connected with a world like that. I said, oh boy, do you connect. Just know that you have the answer. I didn't have it, or I wouldn't be here. But see, God wanted me there to be with
you. Put you in the right place at the right
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And working with people who desperately needed help. They never dared say they had a problem. But I got into a hospital outside of Newport where they had all troubled priests and nuns. And I tell you, that was for me, because I knew they had to be like us. You know, when people look at them and think they can do no wrong, that's very heavy. It's like saying Judy Garland can do any movie, and she couldn't. Mm-hmm. She didn't have the wherewithal inside, and she didn't have religion. I am so grateful that I found Father McGuire. Religion, God, and Christ, if you don't have that, Bob, you can't go on. Like, I have done nothing, Bob, until they told me you wanted to interview me. I love you, as you know. The only interview I've had in all these years has been yours when I went to back to do Livingston and Evans, because you're so
I'm glad
warm.
You're here.
I love you.
I love you too, buddy.
I really do.
Now, the one thing that has always bothered me and is something that goes on a lot is like, and it happened with Judy, was she was always called temperamental because she was not sometimes allowing herself to be pushed around, or she would want to be a perfectionist. And people would call you temperamental too.
You know, I think they can call it temper. I should have lost my temper on Annie Get Your Gun if you were going to lose it. That isn't why. When you're feeling very insecure about something, you go bananas if the camera isn't just right, if the sound doesn't work. You know it. Mm-hmm. And you finally learn on those sets, I want the camera over there. I want the inky day. I want, because you learn it as you go. You know, and all the guys on high loved me because it was called Hutton's Polar Palace. They wore parkas on top of it, but they adored me. And you learn from them, and your temperament comes when the lights aren't right.
Right.
And you know the camera. You know.
You're doing your job.
Yeah,
somebody
I'm doing
else
my
not.
Job. You do yours, you know. Mm-hmm. That's where temperament comes in. And also, you don't feel so good that day, maybe. You know, everybody can't feel super duper
right.
every day, Bob, and especially Judy and me.
But did it bother you when people would give you those labels when they weren't
understanding? I didn't know on my sets at Paramount that they ever felt that way, frankly. I didn't. And the newspapers that I got in, you don't pay much attention to that, Bob, you know?
What about newspaper people?
Well, I've had great luck with the press. It starts with Walter Winchell again. I started with Walter Winchell on Broadway when I was at the Casa Manana.
You used to go around in police cars with him, right?
And George Raft. George Raft, me, and Walter. Walter and I did the, what's the dance they call it today? Some other, we called it the Morocco, you know. And we went in a police car to where they had just shot somebody. And George Raft was a dream. He was such a wonderful guy. And we'd get out and look at the bodies. I mean, it was exciting. And years later, Winchell and I held the big show for Eisenhower in Palm Springs. But see, those are real people. Mm-hmm. I know they don't like Winchell, but I knew him as a person. Mm-hmm. I never thought of him as a newspaper man. Mm-hmm. George Raft was a great guy. You know, some people are great inside. And look how they talked about Winchell. He was a no good, but nobody ever really knew him, I don't think. Because he never showed me that mm-hmm. side of him. Mm-hmm. So I had a great time in New York. See, between Barnard Baruch and Walter Winchell, we're doing the karaoke. That's what we called it, the karaoke. And George Raft was a great dancer. Oh, my God, was he great. We'd go to all the nightclubs. Barbara Walters' father had
Lou Walters.
Yeah, had the great, huge nightclub.
Copacabana.
Oh, it was great. And then I'd go dance with Walter and George Raft.
When you were working in Hollywood so much, was there much chance to go socializing and dancing and doing things like that? And you worked 6 day weeks, didn't you?
No, we only worked 5 days.
Oh, well,
they could call you in. But the only thing I did that was Cary Grant. I'd go to the fights on Friday night. He was a good friend of mine. It's the people that are real somehow get together. Mm-hmm. And Cary Grant went through a rough time in his life. And we'd sit and talk about our rough times. You know, at least you had some camaraderie.
After Paramount, after you decided to not do that anymore, you did do on television. I mean, it was a big, spectacular thing when you did Satins and Spurs.
Oh.
I think that was one of the first big television specials ever.
Was
that not a pleasant experience?
No, because I knew there was no script.
Oh.
There was no script. All I had were the songs.
It was like one of the first musical comedies written for television, I believe.
Well, the producer who did the
Max Liebman.
He did the shows, what were they called? The great. They were great,
right.
Those shows. But that show was awful. There was no script. I couldn't believe. He said, the show will be over 90 minutes. And I said, what the hell do you do during the 90 minutes? I have no script. If you remember that show, Bob, there was no dialogue. Fortunately, I had enough numbers.
I just remember seeing you.
And I slid at the end of that and right onto my fanny. I said, thank God it's over. He came over at Liebman. He said, great, you finished on time because it's live. And I just looked. I said, oh, Mr. Liebman, you are going to be sorry. This is not a good show. Oh, yes, it is. We finished on time. That's all they wanted to know. It was a bomb, Bob. It was horrible. But it was the first color show.
Mm-hmm.
That was the and nobody had color, Bob.
That helped sell a lot of color sets, though.
People
wanting to see it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But nobody had a color set. It was too funny. You know, they can't run on black and white.
Did you lose a lot of money in your lifetime? Make a lot of money and lose a lot?
I made a lot and lost a lot. By lost it, I gave it away. Money is just as a thing that I can't find important. It's important if you're hungry, and it's important if you need a house to live in. But no, my husband's did a pretty good job on me with money.
Cleaning you out?
Yeah, real good. They didn't love me. They didn't know me. I didn't know me either. So it was okay. I would think, what are they in love with? They're in love with the commodity. And if I was home and I didn't feel good, they don't want to know from it, you know.
Mm.
So I had disastrous marriages, yeah.
Four.
four of them. I should never have been married, Bob. My mother was so unhappy when I got married because we were really a duo. Mm-hmm. We really had a good time together. And we played Vegas. My mother shot craps. She had a ball with me. And I never, ever understood my husbands because they didn't know me like my mother knew me. She knew Betty. Mm-hmm. But they didn't ever see me as just Betty.
Talk about the later years of your mother's life. She spent them with you pretty much?
She did. And then I bought her a house in the valley. Outside of LA, and she loved it. But when I got married, my mother sunk. Mm. She just didn't come out of it. My first daughter, Lindsay, my mother came to the hospital. She said, "She looks like a picked chicken." And I thought, "Oh, Mom, you're not going to be a good grandmother at all." But she was strictly showbiz. Because remember, in those joints she ran, she played the uke and the guitar, and she would have been a great star, Bob, had she been born years later, you know. She was a great
woman. Did she enjoy your stardom?
Oh, yeah. She really did. She really enjoyed, and everybody loved her that met her. Everybody adored my mom.
Now, your sister, Marion, was a successful singer with Glenn Miller and all of that. Were you close?
No, we weren't close, because I was on the road all the time before, and then Marion came with me with the Lopez band, and that's when Glenn Miller was just starting. Mm-hmm. So the violinist, Nick, got him to come up to the, we were at the Ritz-Carlton Roof in Boston, and he came up to see me. He thought, we only had one dress, Bob. I said, Vincent, let her sing my songs, and I took off the dress, and she went on, and he hired her that night. Mm. That's a miracle. That was a miracle. And she loved him, so that was a great career for her. But she didn't last long. My sister was alcoholic from 9 years old on.
Wow.
Yeah, very heavy. And I couldn't help her. You know, she had her own life away from me. So we never grew close, and that's too bad. I didn't have anyone close to me except my mom.
But you had a lot of people living off of you.
Oh, everybody. I had at least 100 people on salary at all times.
Wow. And
I love you. I'm getting worn out here, aren't I?
No, you're wonderful.
Oh, Bob.
Are you tired?
No, I'm scared. I'm just getting over
great.
The fear inside.
You're great.
I was so scared. I told all the lovely people you sent to work. I said, I'm so scared. I'm sick.
No, you're great. You're great.
Oh, Bob.
And these such interesting stories you're telling.
Let me give you a kiss for that.
Stories you're telling.
Oh, there. I really had great, great experiences.
What stands out in your mind as some of the great high points, two or three of the high points of your life so far?
I think opening at the Casa Manana.
When you were a kid.
Opening when he came down the steps and said, put her on, I don't have an act. And I knew that was my night. You know how you suddenly mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And I was a big 15, but I had been performing since I was 3, mm-hmm. you know? So that, I think, was the greatest night of my life, which I've already told you how it went. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, I just can't remember. I think giving birth to my first daughter was one of the greatest experiences. I was in labor 36 hours, Bob.
Oh, my God.
I had a great time.
You would remember that.
Oh, boy. And she was a great child. I got great children. But I couldn't give them the time that they needed, Bob. I had to make a living because so many people depended on my performing.
Sure, and not only are you performing, as I say, you know, running households and doing all of that, you were having still photographs taken, you were doing radio shows,
right.
You were doing benefits,
touring,
you went out.
I went overseas.
Yes, with the USO.
Just me. I took my group. You didn't have a piano, so I had a guy with an accordion. I went to England to entertain Eisenhower. That was a great night. I did entertain the men first, and the officers were to be the next night. And I called Eisenhower, and he called me. He said, "Betty, the war is over." I said, "What?" And that was, they had dropped the bomb, and the war was over. And that's when I had met Teddy Briskin, and he wired me a wire size of third finger left hand. And I did. I didn't tell you about meeting him. But
no.
We were married. It was that simple how he proposed to me. But that was a great moment with Eisenhower. Mm-hmm. He was a great, great man. I knew him more as a man than a president. He didn't want to be president. He loved the Army. He really, he was great at it. Then before that, I went to Korea, and I went to all through the South Pacific after the men were first there, and I would fly in on a plane and have to wear a general's outfit in case we were captured. They treat officers differently than they do an ordinary person mm-hmm. like me. Mm-hmm. So I would, and I entertained them. There was no place to dress, or they put like an awning over me, and the guys would do my laundry, my brassiere, and they're out there, and the Koreans were looking over from the mountains because, you know, it was very close, and they're screaming, "Great, take it off," you know. And our soldiers are looking over at them, and then I'd crawl in their little dugouts, and I had the general's hat on, you know, and I'd take my hat off, the blonde hair would fall down. Oh, Betty, you know, and they knew me. I was only, what, 21, 22 when, during the Korean thing.
There's also that famous shot or famous time when you and Fred Astaire and Jimmy Cagney and a bunch of people went on
the Bond tour.
On the Bond tour.
Yeah.
Oh, raised a lot of money to
millions,
help the war effort.
Yeah. That was great. The Marx Brothers, Greer Garson.
Lucille Ball, I think, was on that.
Yeah,
Mickey Rooney.
She hadn't been, she wasn't.
She wasn't Lucy yet.
No, she wasn't. And the Marx Brothers, when I was not the biggest star, the Greer Garsons and stuff, so when we get out of the plane, I looked for a guy on a bike, you know, an officer, and I got on the back of his bike, and we would get to the mayor first. And when I'd come back, Mickey Rooney was saying, "How the hell did you do that?" I said, "Look, you're all big stars. I got to do something to get to the front of the class." He thought that was wonderful. Mickey Rooney thought, he said, "You're just like me." I said, "You got it, boy."
So, okay, we talk about some of the high points. What are some of the low points of your life?
Oh, well, we'd be here all night if I started telling you the low points. They're innumerous, Bob. I don't even want to think about them. I really don't.
Hey, do you think of yourself as having had a hard life? Has it been tough?
Extreme. My private life has been hell, really hell. But my professional life was so wonderful because the audiences understood I was working from my heart. All right, I'm not the best singer, the best, but you put them all together, don't look too closely, and we'll make it. But what I always did, it was like there was only one person out there that I was performing to, and I loved them with all my heart, and they felt it. Bob, they truly feel love from a stage. There aren't many people who work like that because it will kill you.
Well, Jolson did, and
Jolson
Judy
did.
Garland did. But,
yes.
But that's about it.
But see, Jolson, in those days, I don't think it was as tough. Judy and I really had tough times. They were protected. Jolson was so, well, he was scared too, but he was so great because there weren't many greats around. When you have movies and TV, you got zillions of stars.
Right.
You know?
Did you have any concept at that time what a big star you were?
No, absolutely not, Bob. I still don't.
Even though you were on covers of magazines and your
Time magazine, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't really. I always, gosh, Mom, isn't that a lucky break? When we bought my first house, we would look out over the grass. There was a polo field down below us, and on the polo field was Daryl Zanuck, Robert Taylor. You name the stars, and they were playing polo. You know, I said, "Mom, can you believe we're here?" That's how we were like. Children, how could this happen? And we always knew it was going to be taken away. Always. But my mother died before it was all taken away. She was burned to death.
Really?
There was a moment in my life. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I had just seen her the night before. I was pregnant with my last daughter, Carrie. And they came to the house and said she was burned to death. I said, "You're crazy. She was just here." She dropped a cigarette in the couch. And she was burned. I never saw her dead, Bob. Mm. To this day, I don't believe she's dead. She's here. I'm sorry she couldn't see the great stuff that happened, you know? But she loved me, and she, because of my earnings, I did make it correct for my mother. She had a beautiful home of her own, but she was lonely. And she always said, "I'm gonna burn to death someday, Betty." I said, "Why?"
She said that?
Yeah, because she smoked all the time. And I said, "Mom, if you know that," I guess she had burned a couple of chairs in her time, you know. I said, "If you know that, Mom, why do you do it?" She said, "The same reason I was an alcoholic. You can't stop. You gotta want to stop." She didn't want to stop smoking. And you can't blame her, Bob. What did she have? You know, she had me, and now I'm married, and I have have children, and it was just very hard on my mom. Mm.
Well, at least you made it good for her when she was there.
That's what I could pay for, but that isn't what she wanted. She wanted to live with me, and I would, and I had a beautiful guest house where she had lived, but she didn't feel welcome when the husband started, you know.
Betty, some of the bad things that happened to you, were you responsible for some of them?
Oh, I'm sure. Which one are you talking about?
No, I mean, I'm just trying to say, is there some way that you could give advice to somebody to maybe not make some of the mistakes you made, if they were mistakes that you indeed made yourself?
I don't think you think it's a mistake at the time.
Or you wouldn't have done it.
No, you wouldn't.
But in looking back.
Well, looking back, I think if I had had God, if I had had a religion early, I would have been fine. You have to have some place to look, to feel there's somebody holding you up, and I didn't have any of that. Mm-hmm. I was too busy working until I found Father and found religion. I would be, if I were young now, I'd be terrific because I've got the Lord, and I wouldn't be afraid to perform. Like Annie would never hurt me like that if I had the Lord inside of me. Of course, he was inside of me, but I didn't recognize that power.
So that was a very life-changing thing for you.
Oh, total, total. Without Father, I wouldn't be sitting here, Bob. I was near death when he found me.
Let's talk a little about your teaching, because you also became a teacher. And you got your degree.
To college.
You got your master's degree.
I gave you my marks.
Yes.
I graduated cum laude. I didn't go to college until, 20 years ago? What, 15 now?
Yes, about 15.
About 15 years ago.
Yes. How did that happen?
Father was a teacher. And I had only gone to the ninth grade because I had to go to work. Mm-hmm. And Father taught me from the ninth through the 12th grade, and he put all these books in my hands. And when I felt I was ready, I said, Father, I want to go to college. He said, you're ready now. We met with Sister Lucille. It was in Newport, Rhode Island. We met with Lucille and all the teachers, and I had all the writings like on pages. I wrote everything out that I was learning, and I had written my life story called Backstage You Can Have. I have written quite a story, but I'll never release it. But she read it, and she said, oh my God, what do you mean you haven't gone to school? She didn't believe, because my writing was good. I said, Sister, believe me, I only went to the ninth grade. But I went to college then, and as you know, I graduated cum laude, and I taught school there.
Right.
I taught drama and musicals, and I taught everything to the kids. That was a neat job, because then I could begin to give Betty to them, not just the commodity, the hot dog, you know. So that was great.
Did you miss performing during any of that period?
No. Bob, I have never missed it.
Really? Yeah. That's so fascinating to me, because you were such a out there performer, and you...
Well,
that you didn't miss it.
I think it was taken away in Annie. I never got it back, Bob.
Wow.
And I've never told anybody.
That's so shocking, because you would think that would be such a high point in your life that it was.
It would have been, but they didn't want me, Bob. Nobody wanted me. The studio hired me because they couldn't find anybody else.
And it was such a box office smash. You would have thought that in itself would have.
Thank God, yeah.
Yeah.
But MGM wanted nothing to do with me. Now, Judy never went back, as you know.
Right.
She's too sick.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to perform since that movie.
Are you ambitious at all for a show business career again?
No. I would like to do like this, you know, talking to you. But even this scares me. I don't know, something happened inside. That Annie Get Your Gun killed me, the performer in me. But that's how I found Betty.
If you were starting out today, do you think you'd be interested in a show business career?
No. I don't like it anymore. I don't like what they're doing. I think the girls look ridiculous in those clothes with their bazooms hanging out and their dresses cut down below their fanny. There's nothing left. They don't entertain you. Showing up with no clothes on should be no problem for them. They got great figures. But in my day, you had to work.
Deliver.
You had to deliver. These kids today, I feel sorry for them. They play a guitar or something on TV and they're stars overnight, but don't try to sit down and talk to them. They don't know what that means even. You know, that you can't, just do some cockamamie routine on a record. But they make so much money today, Bob. Mm-hmm. And they think they're
great.
But
it's also taken away from them very quickly, too.
Well, think about it. Who is a star today? You can't think of movies. What's her name? Croft just made that movie.
Julia Roberts?
Yeah. What was that movie she just did?
Erin Brockovich?
Yeah. See, they start with things hanging out because that woman was a terrific woman. But those aren't movies to me that you use your mind on. If you can cut your dress down to here and down to, I guess that's it today, Bob.
There's also no great place to do what you did. You know, there's
no stages.
No stages. There's
right.
No nightclubs. There's
exactly.
No cabarets. There's
that's exactly
none of
right.
That to
right.
Be out there truly as an entertainer.
And I think that's why I don't like it anymore. I like to entertain. Mm-hmm. To just sit around talking about TV movies and what they're going to do in TV, it just isn't there. Mm-hmm. As you look at them, Bobby, God, I wish they would suffer a little. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that's the trick, too, my trick. If you're born with nothing, Bob, and you start working for something, that's a great thing. And it's a gift from God. It isn't something you can learn anywhere. You can polish it. But you're either born with that inside of you. Like, you're a wonderful person, Bob. You're born with that. Now you polish it and perfect it. But if it isn't there, I don't give a damn how much you try to polish, it won't happen.
What's Betty Hutton's life like today? Where do you live today?
I live in Palm Springs. Right? I've had a very rough year that I'd rather not talk about. It's been so heavy.
Is it getting better?
Yes, because I came to do your show. This is the first pullout for me, Bob. I would not do anything. I'm scared. I'm scared of it. And I've been hurt really badly. I'm not going back there. I don't know where I'm going, Bob. As I sit here with you, I don't know where I'm going. I have a dear friend of mine in New York, Ben. Ben.
Sure.
He's such a close friend. I'd like to live in New York because I'd be near people from show business that understand it, you know. I need to be around people that want it. I think I can teach it now on a one-to-one and just say, you don't suffer, let me show you how to suffer, you know. But I don't know, Bob, I've had such a tough year that I was so scared to come here. I thought, I'm never going to be able to do it, even though Bob...
Are you scared now?
I'm calming down a little bit. You know, Bob, I don't think I can really do it as great for you as I'd like to.
This is wonderful. I'm really enjoying this talk, and we're learning so much.
Oh, I'm
so really enjoying it so much.
Your people have been so wonderful to me, Bob.
It's a great group.
I was so scared yesterday. And the hairdresser, the makeup lady, and the ward, all your people were I never would have made it today without them. I was going to cancel yesterday and say, just let me go to the studio and do it. They have been divine.
They're
Darcy, all of them, that I was scared to death of. Really. But Ben flew in to be with me. I said, Ben, if you're not there, I'm not going to make it. I know he loves me, Betty. He does.
Do you know how many people out there that do love you? I mean, how many people are excited about the fact
that
you're doing this and they can see you
so,
again
Bob,
and share that?
I hope so, Bob, because I love them. I don't know which camera. I love you. I love you. I just love them, Bob. And the only way I could show them is from a stage, I guess. I think I'd probably like to go back on a stage, probably. You know, it's there they are. Now we can go. Now we can do it. Where this, I'm afraid of them now. That's it. Fear has set in with cameras and stuff.
Well, you know, also, it's very interesting that you had such an incredible success in the movies because you're such a audience kind of person.
Yeah, totally.
You know, you would have thought that that's maybe where you would have stayed and had your great success. And it's interesting that you were, you know, you had this incredible success but you didn't stay on the stage. You did
no,
it in the movies.
I did, yeah. But I think, New York is rough, the stage there, because you got critics like
always,
crazy.
Yes.
And you never know what they're going to say. And if you have to carry the show there, I think that's tough.
It's also why it's New York, though. They demand the best.
But I think that's harder, Bob, to do than movies. Movies
do
are
you?
A breeze compared to the stage. Oh, yes. If they don't like you, forget it. You get out there, you freeze, you know. But then if they don't, you got to work harder, you got to push harder. It's the critics I'm afraid of in New York, I think. But I would like to be back on the stage, yeah.
What's the last stage thing you did? Was it Annie?
Annie. Yeah, I didn't like it very much. I didn't like the part because they wouldn't let me be me.
Right.
I had to copy what she
Dorothy
had,
Loudon. Yeah. It's also she's a nasty lady.
Ooh, tell me about it. Yeah. That's when I think, I never want to go near the theater. They're tough today. They are tough. They have to be, I guess, to be up there. See, that's what I can't be, Bob. I can't be tough. I don't know how, and I don't want to learn. So, but I like to be out of town on the stage, because they come in like kids, you know, and they're ready to like you. If you got a good show, mm-hmm. they're very particular.
That's another thing. We don't have a lot of good shows anymore written.
You don't have the books anymore. And even the songwriters are gone. Mm-hmm. There's some left, but very few. All the great ones are gone.
It all has to do with timing. Are you glad you were born when you were born?
I know that I lived through the greatest era in movies, the 40s, the 50s. In the 60s, the kids were starting with the heavy drugs. Drugs destroyed show business. That's my opinion. I really think that's what happened. When the Beatles came over here and it was all okay to start smoking the joints and they were on LSD and this is my opinion. I think drugs destroyed show business. I really do.
Hollywood too?
Oh, totally Hollywood. That's when it happened. Because everybody could see it on TV. These kids were bombed out of their minds. So they weren't learning anything. They were just saying that sex was okay with anybody and nobody got married anymore. The morals dropped, you know, because you didn't have to push to get things right.
Besides Father McGuire, did you have any great heroes?
How do you mean?
Well, people that you really looked up to, or people that you say would have aspired to be like. Well, maybe when you were starting out, any great heroes?
Oh,
like a Sophie Tucker or someone.
Joan Crawford. I had paid 10 cents to get in to see her. That's all it cost, you know. Joan Crawford and Olivia De Havilland, all the greats. But see, I was thinking dramatically, wasn't I? I really never thought about it. I didn't think I could ever take what I had with my mother and put it on a screen. So I did do it through the stage. If I hadn't happened on Broadway, Buddy never would have taken me to Hollywood, because mm-hmm. I happened out there on that stage. I did then. Mm-hmm. Now I don't think I would, but I did then.
One film I wanted to mention that we hadn't talked about, Spring Reunion. Was that a pleasant experience?
No. That was an experience. My then husband, Alan Livingston, that was Jay's brother, Jay mm-hmm. Livingston. Mm-hmm. We were married, and I shouldn't talk about him.
Okay,
I'm sorry,
but
Bob.
No, just talk about the picture then.
Well, Spring Reunion was with, what's his name?
Dana Andrews.
Dana was very sick. He was an alcoholic all the way. And it was hard shooting with him. But the reason I took the picture, Alan took the picture, he got $25,000 in front, cash. I did not know this. I just had a contract for the amount of money per week, you know. And I had a car that they used on that stage. The budget was so low. And Kirk Douglas was like the producer. They had a big outfit.
Rhina.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. The script was terrible, really terrible. And Dana was so sick that I could not pull that movie off. There was nothing to grab onto. It was nobody's fault, except we had no good. If you don't have the script, Bob, you're dead. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. On a stage, you can get away with murder. But on a screen, forget it. You can't.
Was it a great thrill playing the Palace in New York?
Oh, that's one of the great thrills of my life, because they didn't think I could break records with Judy and Danny. I broke their records. I didn't think I could either, but we did. I took the trapeze. Did you see I swung out over
yes,
the
indeed.
Audience? Yep. Did an ankle drop? Oh, they were screaming, you know. I had to do something crazy like that to pack them in, you know.
Great show. That was a great show.
Yeah, it was. But that was a great moment. It really was. They damn near died when I did an ankle drop right over the audience, you know. It was great.
Any advice you'd give to somebody starting out in show business today or wanting to?
I don't think you're totally aware you're starting out. See, I started with my mother was alcoholic. I started to sing so no one would hurt her. And I don't think I ever really thought about it. I knew I had to work, because that was the Depression era. Mm-hmm. We didn't have anything to eat, Bob. I sang on street corners, and they'd throw money, you know, and I'd pick it up and put it in a hat. I mean, I didn't think of that like it was a profession. We were starving to death. I remember times my mom, we'd have a can of beans for three of us, and that's all we had. And when we went on what relief or whatever the hell they called it, they found out you had earned $5 each, they'd bring the baskets and they'd throw an apple away, or because we weren't as broke as we should be. Mm. It's horrible to be that kind of poor, Bob. I just don't know how anybody stands it. You have to get out there and work and do something. So I never really thought of it. It was my profession with my mother. I don't think we used the word profession. Mm. It was just Betty sings and dances, you know, that's all. And I learned the dancing on the streets from the kids. I never had a lesson in anything, you know.
That's so good. I mean, when you see a number like Way Down Yonder in New Orleans, yeah, and Somebody Loves Me, you're so clean and you're so sharp in the way you perform and the way you hold your body and all of that.
Oh, Bob, thank you.
But that's amazing that you weren't trained.
No. And it's what when with Fred Astaire, when they asked me, could I do a boit ma, a tergit, I never heard the words even. What is it? Show me, you know. But they were always very patient with me. I knew how to dance from the streets. All the kids knew how to do everything. You could sing, whatever, just to make enough to feed yourself. So I don't know what you'd say to people out there if they're thinking. I think today, because of television, they think of a profession. But see, we didn't have television. Mm-hmm. You had to go to a stage somewhere to see it. I went in all the amateur shows around Detroit, Michigan. And that's how you learn an audience. But today, they look at TV and they say, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's great because they make it very fast. But I don't think they hang in there very long. And
it's also very much today where the objective is money, which again was totally not anything you were after.
No, with the biggest salary I ever made at Paramount was $5,000 a week. That, I mean, today they make $90 million a minute, you know. But then I earned a lot on the stage. I got a lot of money because I go halves with whoever I was working for. I didn't have a salary anymore. I owned the company, I owned the orchestra, all the performers. You take a big gamble if you lose, but thank God I never had any of those problems. So I made a lot of money, yeah. But I gave it all away, Bob.
Well, that's that big heart of yours, though, too. It's just the way you've always been.
I can't fight over it, you know, I just can't. I'd love to give people money because it makes them so happy. It never made me happy. That's why I think I don't talk about it much. Money can't make you happy, I don't think.
Have you ever been really poor? In later years?
Oh, yeah. I'm poor now, Bob. What do you mean? Sure, when you aren't making millions and thousands or whatever, it takes over. Yeah, I've had a very, very difficult year because I lost everything. Everything. I would love to tell you that story, Bob, but I don't think I could.
Well, you can tell me that 10 years from now when we'll do this again, or 5 years from now.
I would love to. I would really. It's so hard to explain. I was so sick and I broke my arm and I was in a hospital. Here you go, baby. I was in a hospital and the bank I had in Palm Springs, I had gone to be with a friend of mine in Palm Springs and it just didn't work out. And after I lost Father, I really started downhill, you know. And my daughters were afraid I was going to get sick and want to be with them. And the bank went to the government, I won't tell you, and said that I was being taken advantage of. Somebody was stealing from me, and I didn't know it, Bob. I just don't look at things like that anymore. So the government took me over. I didn't even know they were allowed to do this. And they protect you from the world, and they take your money. And it's in the bank and all, but they stop that way. They had pictures of this person and all, where they'd go and get money out of the ATM.
Out of your account.
Yeah. It's so devious and tricky. You've got to be tricky to do it. But when they took over, Bob, I lost my heart and soul because I never had anybody tell me what I could eat and what I could do when you can't be with us, and they're strict over you. And the government were right because I probably would have gotten into big trouble in Palm Springs, you know, because things didn't go right, Bob. But you know what? Again.
I hope this is the beginning of good things for you. This coming here, being here with us.
I didn't even mean to. I have been so hurt this past year. But you know, if the government hadn't done that, I probably would be dead. They did it to protect me, and for that I'm grateful. But it's going to take me a little while. I'm out from under their power now, but it's hard. Bob, it's very hard.
But look at all the other hard things you've had to fight through before.
Yeah.
And you've done it.
I think this is the toughest one.
Well, but you can do it.
I'm so glad I was here with you, Bob. I don't know if I can do it again, but it's
you'll
been
be able
so
to do
great
it again.
To be here
you'll
with you.
Be able to do it again.
I
have
so.
Full faith in that.
Okay.
And when we talk next time, maybe sooner, but say 5 years from now if we're talking, what would you like to have had happen to you between now and 5 years from now? What would you like for your future?
I don't know what I want for my future. I know I want to feel safe again. And when I was performing on the stage in the latter part, I felt safe. In Vegas, I could walk out there and I knew it was going to be okay because I was used to that kind of stage. I'm not used to what they're doing in TV. I watch it. Like that Angel show that's on is very good. What's that Angel show that's on TV? They're all angels.
Oh yes.
The black woman.
Touched by an angel.
Yeah. I've been watching that show, and each week I see them. They're hanging more hair on them. They're putting on more makeup. They don't look right. Oh my God, that's TV. They had such a great show. And all of a sudden, I think, why are they hanging all that hair on the angels in the makeup suddenly? They don't look like they did in the beginning. It was great. Leave it alone. See, that's the difference in a movie, at least. You do it, and that's it. You can't say, now I'm going to fix my hair in this scene. I'm going to wear a little more makeup in that scene. You can't do that in a movie. That is healthy.
Yeah.
I think movies are safer than TV. TV, there's so many people deciding, oh, my hair doesn't look right. There's a hairdresser. I'll fix that. And pretty soon they don't look like the person that got hot.
Yeah. I just wish I could find more movies I wanted to go see now. Did you see the movie, by the way, L.A. Confidential?
No.
You know that they have a song of yours in it, a recording, Hit the Road to Dreamland. Play in it.
Yeah. No. Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's one thing I hadn't talked about is your recording career. You had a big recording career.
Yeah, that was great because you don't ever expect that to happen, you know?
Well, you didn't because you didn't think you sang that well. You have a wonderful voice, and that's where we got to hear a lot of your ballads that from the movies.
Yeah, I would like to record songs again. I really think it would be great of some of the ones of mine that were hit to put them in an album now.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I think they would get it on the records. You know, it's not TV, but the recordings are good, I think.
Was that tough going in and recording songs
in
that process?
Oh, boy, and how. But once you're in there, and I knew all the guys in the band, it was sort of your own show. You know, and I enjoyed that. I enjoy recording. I think because it's not hard for me. I just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to warm up a lot.
Was radio hard? I mean, the radio appearances that you did?
No, because you had an audience in radio then. You had audience and the microphone on the Bob Hope shows. Well, we did a lot of soldier shows out of California. Well, he did them all over.
Like the command performance.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody wants to record anymore. You know, there aren't any songs that I hear, gee, I'd like to make that a record.
Mm-hmm.
They used to look at you, Bob, the writers, and say, oh, I know what kind of song this performer will like. In other words, you grew to them.
Sure, they tailor them.
And they came into my dressing room at Paramount, you know, and they'd work like Rockin' Horse. They worked out right at the piano. You know, bang, wind, the bridge, slam, down, went the table, crash, went the china tray. Like, I joined up at my walking horse, you ran away. Remember that?
Sure, absolutely.
You know, Fred Astaire, that song.
Can't stop talking about it?
The Rockin' Horse. I'll remember when bang went the lamp, down went the table, crash went the tray, rip, rip, went the curtain, wham, went the window, crang, went a bell, wee, went a whistle, bam, went a pen, slam, went a door, on that eventful day when his rocking horse ran away. Astaire would stand up and try to dance to that. He loved I Can't Sing I'm sorry, Bob. I get excited when I look at you.
when you would, because I know that in most cases you would pre-record songs.
Yes.
Did you pre-record your songs?
Everything, yeah.
Really? Because they're so tricky, the lyrics that
very
you have
tricky,
to keep up with.
But you see, again, that's my racket.
Uh-huh.
A Miracle at Morgan's Creek. Do you remember that long scene with Diana Lynn? It was like a 12-page scene. And Sturgis came to me and he said, Betty, how am I going to do this? I can't be recording because the cars, they didn't know how to do it then, mm-hmm. are coming. He said, is there any way I can do this long scene without cutting? I said, absolutely. We pre-record. He said, like a song. Give us the dialogue. We'll go into the microphones and we record. And we have to imagine, you tell us how many cars on the street, who's crossing over. But we kind of knew. Mm-hmm. Diana Lynn and I did a 12-page
wow.
scene, pre-recorded. And we, as you saw us coming, I'm sure you couldn't tell that was a recording.
No, had no idea.
He absolutely flipped. He was so proud to do that. It's tough to shoot a long scene
sure.
with traffic. I'll bet they never think about that in TV, you know,
no.
when they do a long scene,
no.
pre-recorded.
Well, they have so many mics and so
well,
many
you gotta
tricky
have a performer
have,
no. that knows what pre-recording mm-hmm. means, you know. Because to do a song and then go back to it, that was a breeze. But to do a scene is tough.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good.
One of the things about your career, you had great sex appeal on screen.
And wow, Bob,
well, you did.
You're crazy.
You did. And,
oh, thank
and women
you.
Loved you as much as men.
Yeah, I
did. Did you ever figure that out with the audience, what
no.
it was about you, why women responded to you as much as men?
I don't think so.
That didn't happen too often.
No, but my audience were men, and I never thought about this is a woman show or this is a man show. No, I just perform, and like I told you, with all my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I perform. Sometimes I'm good and sometimes I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's the greatness of showbiz. Some nights you're marvelous. Other nights, oh my God, why did I do that? So that's what I mean. On TV, they get a chance to fix the hair. And that's maybe not so good, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look lousy like you did. If you're in a scene, don't fix them up to look better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cut, let's hang some more hair and it wasn't long enough or something. And the makeup changes drastically on
mm-hmm.
television. When you watch a show each week, I hope they don't do that to my friend on The Millionaire because he's so wonderful. Bob, I adore that man. God, he's good. I watched him and I thought, I can do Bob's show. I won't be scared. If he can do it, after all, I can do it. I swear. I wanted to send him a wire and say, thanks to you, I'm not going to be so afraid on Bob's
oh,
show.
Nice. That's nice. You had a lot of nicknames. Blonde Bombshell.
Blonde Bombshell.
Dynamite.
Hottentot. Hottentot,
yeah. Any favorites, the nicknames? Did any of them bother you?
America's number one jitterbug.
Oh, yeah.
Who
you kind of put jitterbug into the
yeah, they never,
into the language.
Winchell did that.
Uh-huh.
He said, I can't explain what she does. And he said, she's not the greatest singer, she's not, but she is, wow, she's America's number one jitterbug. That's where it came from. He did not know how to explain what I did. Oh, she's a great singer. She's a great, firstly, I wore this great huge skirt so you could not see my feet, that I wasn't doing some fabulous step. But I moved in it so much, Bob, that the dress looks like it's dancing, you know.
Uh-huh.
But he named me America's number one jitterbug. A lot of people have taken the credit for that line, and they think there, and they always like that, the blonde bombshell. I'm the first one they said that about, but it really applied to my dear Marilyn Monroe. She was, and Betty Grable
mm-hmm.
was, you know.
Did you get to know Grable?
Oh, yes. Well, Harry James and I almost.
Sure.
Yeah, we were, I loved him, and he loved, but not to marry. I probably should have married him. But they came to Vegas, and I was playing Vegas. Yeah, we became very good friends, yeah. I love Betty Grable, and I like anybody who works that hard. See, they're from the stage again,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, and real people. Oh, Betty Grable was, I didn't know
how,
him, but she was.
Oh, when he was a real people, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
Harry James was great. He was really a great human being. I loved him.
I've asked you before, and you said you never really felt like you were a big star.
No.
But you were when you started out, from the time you were in the Fleet's Inn, you were a major,
yeah.
major star. Was there anyone that you in your own mind would compare yourself to if you were trying to describe Betty Hutton to someone who hadn't seen your work?
I don't know, performance wise, I don't think anybody tries to do me, or who do you think I'm like in anything around today? I can't think of anyone, Bob.
Well, that's one of the great things about you, I think, is that you are unique. I mean, what you did, your style, your energy, and all of that.
I don't know if it was unique. My mother was like
but,
that.
No, but nobody else ever did that in show
no,
business.
No.
I mean, well, there I was a like Sonya Henie ice skated, Esther Williams swam. There was a Betty Hutton style that you did that nobody else did, that you kind of introduced into it.
It was the energy.
Plus you were beautiful and could play romantic leads at the same time. That was a magic combination.
Keep talking, Bob.
No, it's true. It's true.
I love it. Tell me more.
Betty, I cannot tell you what it means to me to have you here and for talking and being so honest and being yourself and being so real and letting me tell you for a lot of people how much you're loved. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bob, very, very much. I love you.